Hey, this is Mallory.
And this is Bethany.
And you're listening to Killer Stargazing. This is the podcast where we research a killer and look into their birth chart to see if maybe we can get a more in-depth look on what makes them tick. And a birth chart, in case you don't know, is a map showing the positions of the planets when a person was born, and it's said to determine just about everything about someone: personality, relationships, their potential, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and every week we also have our featured killer cocktail. This week we are having a Noble Blood Margarita.
Yes.
The ingredients are tequila, blue curacao, and lime juice, garnished with cherries. And the recipe will be on our Instagram at Killer Stargazing, so check it out.
Yes, let's try this.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, that's good.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yum.
That being said, if you like true crime and astrology, or you're just curious, grab a drink and let's get into it. Mm-hmm. So this week I chose a very old killer, and I'm doing the story of Elizabeth Bathory. So she's also known as the Blood Countess, and I did try to keep this one from Bethany.
Which you did. You did a good job of it.
I did. But when she saw when and where she was born, she pretty much guessed who it was, or your sister guessed who it was.
I was talking to my sister about it, and I just said, oh, it's an old killer from like the 1500s. She's like, Elizabeth Bathory? I was like, I don't know. Maybe.
It was.
Turns out she was right. So good job, Allie.
So this time we thought that Bethany would go over her chart first, and then I would tell the story. So what are we looking at chart-wise for Elizabeth Bathory?
Okay. So since we don't have a birth time, therefore no ascendant, I'm going to focus on her dominant planets and the signs that we do have available. So as far as planets go, Sun through Pluto, there's sort of like 10 characters in a role play. So like each one has its own personality, its own way of acting, its own strengths and weaknesses. They represent 10 distinct personalities.
Okay.
And just as the planets symbolize characters, signs represent the hues, so the mental, emotional, and physical structures of an individual.
Okay.
Which is why the interpretation of each placement in a chart can be so different from one to the next, because the emotional factors of these signs, they all react differently to the personalities that each planet represents when they're positioned together.
Everyone's so different, and so that's why different sun signs can be totally different people.
Absolutely. Anna. It gets even more in-depth when the 12 houses come into play, but, you know, of course, we can only determine that when we have the exact time of birth, too.
So, which we don't.
Which we don't have. So, starting with the most dominant planet in her chart, which is by far the sun.
Okay.
So, the sun in general is the most powerful, like, planet in astrology. It represents vitality, authority. It's the force that sustains us.
Yeah.
It gives us life, energy, warmth, food. Like, we would literally die without the sun.
Yeah.
So solar beings generally display a lot of charisma, leadership qualities, amazing willpower. They enjoy thinking big and pretty much move forward on, well, like, whatever the fuck they want to move forward with.
Yeah.
Which actually goes hand in hand with some big solarian weaknesses. Pride. Ego, vanity, excessive authority. It can be really easy for them to overstep and fall into these weaknesses.
Kind of like a stereotypical Leo.
For sure, because the sun, you know, her sun is in Leo.
Yeah.
And Leo is also ruled by the sun.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So our sun sign in astrology is kind of like the role we've been given in this grand drama of our life. Ooh. As Shakespeare even said, one can think of life as a play that one enters into at the time of birth.
I love that.
You're the leading actor in this drama, and the role you're playing every day, that's your sun sign.
Wow.
So, it's a fun analogy.
It is fun.
So, Elizabeth, we have fiery Leo in the fiery-ass ruling planet of the sun. So, the sun is the center of our solar system. All the planets revolve around it. And those with the sun in Leo can tend to see themselves as the focal point of everything.
Okay. Thinking of a few Leos in my life.
Yeah, right? They bask in the spotlight. Everything they do is done with a flair for the dramatic.
Yes.
Like, everything about them is very theatrical.
Okay.
They absolutely despise the ordinary. the dull, the mundane, the day-to-day routines just quickly lead to boredom and extreme unhappiness.
Get it out of here.
Yes. But that never really lasts long because when real life doesn't supply enough excitement, they create their own. So they're born to do things in a really big way. And Leo is just the most royal sign in the zodiac.
Okay.
There's nothing or no one that's too good for them.
Royal nothing. Or noble.
Yes. Nothing is too luxurious. Like, makes sense why Leo's represented by the lion. Regal, brave, dominating. Maybe a little lazy at times, but nevertheless just possessing a lot of nobility and pride.
Okay.
So, Leo suns, they tend to look for what they can get out of life for themselves. And they do dominate others in this process. They see themselves as pivotal and naturally feeling entitled to rule. Just natural born leaders in every way.
Okay.
Confidence completely surrounds them. Leadership's just a really special quality of this particular sign. And others will look to Leo to provide direction, cohesiveness. They're attracted to Leo's energy.
Yeah.
And enthusiasm and just the take charge attitude. And problems tend to arise with this unless Leo learns to accept the role with humility and grace. Which I know plenty of Leos who have.
Yes.
But their king size ego is no joke.
For real.
Pride is truly Leo's Achilles heel.
Okay.
On one hand, you couldn't ask for a better friend than a Leo. Generous, faithful, a truly loyal friend.
My best friend in the entire world is a Leo.
Yes.
Very loyal.
So they're born with a need to help others. And they will do so even if it takes a lot of time and energy. They'll do just about anything for you, especially if approached in the right way, which, by the way, it's flattery. Flattery is the right way. But they can low-key sort of expect some lavish praise in return.
Oh, like, you know? I did this thing for you. Yeah, like, appreciation. Kiss my feet.
Yeah. What are you going to do to show me your appreciation in return for what they've done for you? So it can actually be kind of a motivating factor to them helping you.
Okay. Like, if I help them,
their ego,
all the praise,
it craves adoration.
Okay.
It just, to the point where even if you're totally blowing smoke up their ass, like, whatever, they don't care.
Worship me.
As long as they're hearing praises, they rarely stop to wonder, like, oh, are they being sincere? Yeah. Like,
is that real or fake?
Yeah, no, just please keep telling me how awesome I am, please.
Tell me I'm great.
So everything about Leo is grand, flashy, showy, dramatic, including their dark side.
Mm-hmm.
So when Leos are good, they're very, very good. But when they're bad, they're horrible.
Okay.
Horrible.
Yep.
A Leo who goes dark side can be one of the most unpleasant human beings imaginable. So let's get to the darker side of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure Elizabeth is going to represent the darker side.
I believe so. So yeah, like I said, Leo, dark side, not fun to deal with. Vain, selfish, arrogant, hedonistic. And these kind of traits come out particularly in an insecure Leo.
Okay.
So when Leo's dealing with demons, they tend to put everything else, like even their children, just kind of in the shadow. The deep-rooted insecurity that sits at the center of this sign just completely clouds over the other more attractive, you know, noble sunshiny qualities that they have. One well-known example of a displaced Leo, the typical displaced Leo, the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh.
They can become complaining, just self-centered, black holes, just destroying everything around them in a monstrous rage of dissatisfaction.
Wow.
Failure to offer respect, or if you question Leo's authority, or right to rule, that can have some pretty dire consequences.
That will play a role in the story.
Leos hate to be told what to do. So should anybody question a decision they've made, just watch you back.
You know? Oh, no.
You've been warned. So if you've fallen out of favor with a Leo by insulting them in some way, more often than not, that's a permanent banishment type scenario.
Oh, wow. Like, so, like, hold
grudges. Don't even try.
Oh, grudges?
Yeah. Don't even try to come back. So, also want to talk a little bit about Leo in love, because her Venus is also in Leo.
Okay.
So, Venus represents two main areas of our life, love and money. Although, somewhat of a simplistic interpretation, Venus rules our sentiments, what we value, the pleasures that we take in life.
Okay.
Grace, charm, beauty, all ruled by Venus. Through Venus, we learn about our tastes, pleasures, artistic inclinations, and just generally what makes us happy. Planet's all about pleasure. It's the pleasure planet.
That's the pleasure planet.
So I'm not going to say that Leo's necessarily a selfish lover 100%, but they absolutely need praise in this area too.
Yeah.
So she needs to be treated like the queen that she is.
Okay.
Any lover has to ignore her shortcomings. I mean, she doesn't think she has any anyways, but
this is true.
You just, you know, go with that. Dwell on the good. Don't be shy with the compliments, because if you want to get anywhere with her,
that's how you do it.
Yep. well, at the end of the day, one way or another, guarantee one thing, you will never be bored with a Leo woman.
Okay. Yeah. Seems like she keeps it pretty exciting.
She does. She keeps it fresh. Now, okay, so let's move on to Mars. Now, Mars is the planet of energy, action, and desire. It rules our basic animal instincts for aggression, anger, and survival.
Mm.
Our sexual desires also come under the rule of Mars. So whereas Venus rules more like romantic attraction,
yeah,
Mars is more associated with basic body attraction.
Okay.
So it's the planet of action rather than reaction.
Yeah, like you said, like animalistic.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Or like, you know, instincts.
Yes.
So with Mars, there's no contemplation before action. It's just raw instinct. Mm-hmm. And the push that gets us out of bed in the morning. Our drive, our desire nature, it's our active energy.
Okay.
So the sign that we have in Mars shows our basic sexual nature, how we express anger, what makes us angry, and our first instinct to act.
Okay.
Our competitive nature is also revealed in Mars. Okay. So what sign do we have in the fiery, aggressive Mars? Leo.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, she is a Leo. She's, to the tips of her claws.
She's literally a super Leo.
Yes. So the Mars in Leo woman is, of course, very proud. She likes to showcase her accomplishments and draw admiration upon herself. She deserves and demands praise, recognition, fulfillment of all her desires, just admiration from everybody.
Yeah.
With this position, you are so far from ordinary.
Wow.
She's the very epitome of a fighting spirit. It literally cannot get more combative and dynamic than this.
Oh my God.
Like, any challenge she faces is nothing but mere dust in front of her. Like, okay. She'll take on just about anything and probably come out victorious.
Okay, I can see how that will also play in the story.
yeah, basically no problems at all achieving what she sets out, you know, to achieve. Strong determination, great confidence. She goes a long way from conflict to conflict, gathering experience and trophies along the way. She likes to showcase these trophies, won through hard fighting, and of course the spotlight. It just seems to be her birthright.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never take the spotlight away from her. Like, the woman born with Mars in Leo knows she deserves a queen's treatment and will not accept anything less. Mm-hmm. So these women are known for their spontaneity and very impulsive instincts.
Okay.
With Mars sending its fiery energy down on this woman, she has enough fuel to continue whatever journey she takes on, all the way to the end. And she's bound to make quite the impression anywhere she goes. Her love for drama and showy situations is actually kind of mind-blowing. Mars Leos are very creative, you know, at their work, but can be extremely authoritative.
Creative in their work.
And a bit condescending, you know, it's kind of one of the traits too. So it seems to be really just those grand causes that excite her enough to even lift a finger.
Okay.
And, you know, when it does, it's bound to result in a legendary adventure of, like, epic proportions.
Okay.
Just filled with risky encounters, deadly challenges, like, just attracting these powerful, even powerful friendships along the way. So everything is so epic and dramatic.
Yeah.
She's bound to change the world in one way or another. Just fucking dramatic ass.
Yeah.
So these women also have a very unique perspective on sex. Kind of an approach that would make your hairs stand on edge, even more so if you experience it firsthand.
Mm.
Just very dramatic sex drive, very hot-blooded, impulsive. She dominates in that area too. So she just feels best in a position of dominance when she can completely control the situation. So it goes 100% how she wants it to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most partners won't even notice the extent of this tendency because she pulls it off in such a charming way.
But okay.
It's definitely there.
Like she'll fuck you over with the, and you'll be smiling.
You'll love it. Like, please fuck me over some more.
Yeah.
Both physically and psychologically, she will try to, like, subdue her lovers to make them obey, you know?
Like, even dominatrix style?
Yeah, even in the silent way. Like, there's just something very dominating, whether it's with words or actions. She just,
She dominates.
Like, you don't even notice that she's been the one to dictate all your moves and decisions, especially when it comes to sex. Like, she's smart enough to change her tune in public where she will let her partner seem like, like, he's totally free to be independent and, you know, even praise him constantly.
Yeah, but he's not.
A little mismanipulative.
Wow.
So what happens when you no longer entertain their desire to be in charge and take the lead?
So, like, you get sick of it.
Yeah. Like, when, yeah, it's basically like, all right, then, bye. Like,
yeah, leave. Enough.
Yeah, if you're not going to continue the way I want you to be, then not interested.
Yeah.
What keeps them there is, you know, the feeling of being in control.
Mm.
So a sense of emotional dominance where the whole game rotates around their needs and wishes. Fun fact, Beyonce and Hillary Clinton both have their Mars in Leo.
Really?
So, good luck with that, Bill and Jay-Z. All right. I've bashed on Leo for long enough now.
All right.
My Leo kings and queens, we do love you. We all love you. We're just jealous. No. But really, at the end of the day, it is difficult to truly dislike a Leo. Like, they have a disposition about them that really does light up a room. And,
like, a magnetism.
Yeah. Honestly, the world would be so much less fun without Leos around.
Yeah. If only, you know, just don't go to the dark side.
Yeah. Just, you know, keep it humble and, you know, just...
Humble-ish.
Yeah, humble-ish. You have to go full humble, yeah. But, you know.
All right. All what other signs of Elizabeth will we be roasting today?
All right. The final placement we're going to be looking at is her moon. So the moon represents emotions, instinct, the unconscious. It's the side of you that reacts before you have time to think. So in a lot of ways, your moon personality is one you keep very hidden. Since instinctive behavior is very much discouraged in society.
Yeah.
Like, in certain respects, it's a part of yourself that you might find kind of disturbing. It's like your inner core, which that's where you feel hate, jealousy, and where fear is, and even fantasies that you deny yourself. Like, all that juiciness is your moon.
It's all your secrets.
Oh, yeah. All the secrets. So... of course, that's not the complete picture of the moon's influence on your personality. It's also, you know, that's also the side of you that experiences joy and pleasure. You know, it's just the side that reacts to emotional stimuli.
Oh, okay.
And it's just the first gut reaction to anything that happens, be it good or bad.
Okay.
So her moon is in Pisces. Now, this is a very deeply emotional placement. Pisces is the astrological sign of sorrow and self-undoing.
Yeah.
You know, moon and Pisces people have a whole lot going on inside.
So like, are we roasting you right now?
I guess we are roasting me right now, too.
This bitch has a Pisces moon.
I do. So I'm feeling this right now for sure.
Let's hear it.
All right. Well, just a lot of hidden dreams and desires. Their emotions just run really deep and a very lively imagination as well. In the real world, though, that they don't always have the easiest time. a particular danger for anyone in the moon, with the moon in this position, is that they don't necessarily see the world for what it really is. They very much escape into a world of private imagination.
Okay.
They just have this strong tendency to they have this strong tendency to dodge harsh realities and obligations. So in pretty much every aspect of their lives, they prefer illusion to reality.
I mean,
illusion can just be better sometimes.
It can be better sometimes.
They definitely let their emotions get the better of them. They can be discontented and very secretive. But people with this placement are also highly intuitive, and their receptiveness is so intense that it may even border on, like, psychic abilities.
Okay.
Or, in more disturbing and rare cases, straight-up hallucinations.
Okay, all right.
I have never experienced that, so I cannot speak on that firsthand. Yes.
And we are talking about Elizabeth.
Correct. They are constantly picking up on the feelings of others, along with just the mood of the atmosphere around them. So very much in tune to other people's suffering.
Now, and if they enjoy that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another story.
Now, when they have a fire sun sign, which she does, and then some, it's much easier for them to come across as confident and in charge and suppress a lot of these deep emotions that come with the moon in Pisces. However, they do have a weakness for letting those with strong wills kind of help lead them down unsavory paths.
Okay.
Now, going to the dark side of the moon, because we all have it, I wanted to read this. I was going to summarize some things, but, like, this was just too funny, and I just want to share it verbatim.
Okay.
Because while I definitely see some very real attributes to the dark side of a Pisces moon, this is just way too entertaining and clearly written by someone who severely hates someone with the moon in Pisces. Like, I get major ex-friend vibes from this.
So. Okay, let's hear it.
All right, so here we go. When your moon is in Pisces, you have psychopathic tendencies and an extreme aversion and hatred for reality. Oh. No one is allowed to enter your fantasy world. And oftentimes, you're looked at as delusional and sociopathic. You enjoy conversating with other dimensional beings, but you distrust basically all of your closest friends. No one will ever really get to know you because you allow people to only see the version of you that you've created in your mind. If you aren't already a drug addict, becoming one may be on your bucket list. You avoid responsibility like the plague, yet you will murder somebody in a heartbeat if they betray you in any way, such as eating your lunch in the office refrigerator.
Wait, hold on. Side story, real quick.
Yeah.
Didn't you tell me?
Oh, shit.
Please share this.
So when I was in fourth grade, I was just very hungry and fat. And my mom never got those, like, Little Debbie cakes for lunch. And so many of my friends had these, like, awesome desserts in their lunches every day, like the Little Debbie cakes or, like, full-size candy bars. And I got, like, grapes, you know? So basically when the class would go out to recess, I would kind of stay behind. I would go into the cubbies and I would take all the good desserts out, stuff them in my shirt, run into the bathroom, close the stall, and just sit there and freaking eat everyone's desserts.
Oh, no.
Now, as if that's not already kind of, like, messed up, I even did this to my best friend.
No.
Her name was also Bethany, actually. And I remember, like, everyone would come back and, like, from recess and be in their lunch, and everyone was just like, oh my God, where's my dessert? Like, my dessert. And then, like, I even remember, like, when Bethany was like, you know, my dessert. And I was like, oh my God, who do you think did it? Like,
you manipulative Pisces moon bitch.
I even did it to my own sister once before we left for school. My mom, like, because then there was one day, because every now and then my mom would give us a good dessert, like, yeah, like a nutty bar or something. And I remember one day before we left for school, I opened her lunchbox, took her dessert out, put it in my own lunchbox, And then, like, later on, I remember at dinner, Allie was just like, why didn't I get a dessert in my lunch today? Like, I only got, like, a sandwich and chips. And my mom's like, what are you talking about? My mom's like, I put a dessert in there. And I was like, oh, shit. Sounds like you got a dessert thief in your class. It might be the same person that's, you know, in my class. I don't know. So that is kind of funny that that's in there.
Okay.
All right.
Back on track.
Back on track here.
That was awesome.
All right, so you are prone towards demonic possession because you never entirely operate in this physical world. You actually enjoy this because you'll have an excuse for the startling way you behave. Oh, man. You have a knack for everything that is not sustainable in the physical world. And you cry if you have to call customer service because your cable's acting up. You effectively read everyone else's psyche and you use this information against them maliciously. You always proclaim to be innocent, yet most times you're the mastermind behind hiring the hitman to make it look like an accident.
Or steal all your desserts.
Your best friends in life are all imaginary because people with common sense refuse to deal with you.
Oh my god. Okay, that's not... Yeah, I definitely get, like, who hurt you vibes. Yeah,
exactly. That is either, like, an ex-boyfriend, girlfriend, or just an ex-friend. Or an ex-coworker that had their food stolen.
Oh my god.
Also, fun little fact, some Moon and Pisces celebs.
Okay.
Robert De Niro.
Ooh.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I love her.
Yes. Elvis Presley, Martin Luther King, and Prince.
Nice.
Yeah.
So. Not all Pisces moons are bad.
Not all of them.
You had to throw some of that in there, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, exactly. Like, look at those epic people. They're Pisces moon, too.
Yes.
So that is what we have for Elizabeth.
Okay. All right. So I guess we should get into her story, then.
Yes. Can't wait to hear it.
Okay. So I do want to say there will be some graphic material discussed here, so just be warned. And also... because she was born in Hungary, there are a lot of Hungarian words, and I tried really hard to learn the pronunciations, but I will most likely fuck a lot of this up. Okay, so the first thing I want to say is that while she is known as Elizabeth Báthory, the Hungarian pronunciation of her name is Erzsébet Báthory. But I will refer to her as Elizabeth Báthory.
Yeah, let's do.
So the Countess Elizabeth Báthory was born on August 7th, 1560, in Nyírbátor, Kingdom of Hungary. She was born a Hungarian noblewoman. Her family owned land in the Kingdom of Hungary, which is now Hungary, Slovakia, and Romania. She was the daughter of Baron George Báthory and Baroness Anna Báthory. Both her uncle and her maternal grandfather were voivode of Transylvania, which was the highest ranking official in Transylvania, and they were appointed by monarchs. So through her mother's side of the family, she was the niece of the Hungarian noble István Báthory, or he's also known as Stephen Báthory.
Oh, I like that better.
Yeah. He was the voivode of Transylvania, the king of Poland, the Grand Duke of Lithuania, and the Prince of Transylvania. Okay. So she was pretty freaking noble.
Yeah. Was there not like enough people to spread the titles around?
I don't know how all that worked, but I was like, how can you be all of these things? Yeah. But unless I'm wrong, someone let me know. But I looked it up in a few different places and that's what it said.
All right.
So she was said to have tortured and killed 650 victims, mostly young girls between the ages of 10 and 14.
Mm.
So I didn't find much on her childhood. It's not surprising. It was in the 1500s, but she did seem to have a lot of health issues. More than likely, she was an epileptic. She had a lot of seizures. Mm-hmm. And they thought that this was due to inbreeding and that her mother and father were first cousins.
I mean, they probably were.
Yeah, right? Probably. Back then, they called this falling sickness, the epilepsy. Yeah. And the treatments for falling sickness included rubbing the blood of a non-sufferer on the lips of an epileptic, or giving them a mix of a non-sufferer's blood and a piece of skull as the epileptic episode ended.
So this may be why, like, the murders started as kind of, like, medicine?
So that's a theory. People thought maybe that's what led to her killings, that she was just trying to cure her sickness, mm-hmm. but that's just speculation. It was also thought that she became a killer because of everything that she witnessed as a child. She saw a lot of fucked up things. She saw seriously brutal punishments that were executed by the family's officers, like servants being terribly beaten, killed. Some say she was taught Satanism, witchcraft from family members, but nobody really knows. Mm-hmm. It was recorded, though, that one of the punishments that she saw as a little girl was that a peasant man was caught stealing. And his punishment was to be sewn into the body of a horse.
Whoa, they got creative back then.
I know.
How do you think of that?
I don't know. And also, I don't know how you equate stealing with, you know what?
I thought you were going to say they chopped off their hand or something.
Right, I mean, like that would make sense. Like sticky fingers or something. Yeah. No, you know what? Let's do it. Let's kill this horse.
Yeah.
And then sew this man inside of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when Elizabeth saw this, she started laughing. She thought it was hilarious. Man. So, you know, pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Being born into this nobility, though, she was given a lot more than most people, obviously, and especially women. So besides being incredibly wealthy and having power, she was educated. Mm-hmm. And being educated in the first place back then was a big deal. Yeah. Being a woman that was educated, she was taught Latin, German, Hungarian, and Greek. So I want to talk about her marriage, and that is because it seemed to me that he was equally as terrible as her, and that they were kind of perfect for each other in literally the worst way. So back in those days, it's not uncommon to be married off at a very young age, and especially because she had a high social status, a lot of times these arrangements were like political moves.
Yeah.
She became engaged at the age of 10 to a 15-year-old boy named Count Ferenc Nadasdy.
An older man.
Yes. And then it was rumored that when she was 13, she gave birth to a child from a peasant boy that she was having an affair with.
Well, that Leo sex drive kicked in early.
There you go. So it was said that she had gave the child away in secret to someone that the Bathory family trusted, that she wasn't going to keep this child, gave it away. When Ferenc found out about the affair, he had the peasant boy castrated and thrown to a pack of wild dogs.
Typical. Don't put the blame on the...
Don't mess with my women.
No.
So, on May 8th, 1575, when she was 14, almost 15, Elizabeth married Ferenc, who was 19. And even though she's terrible, I did think this was kind of cool because her social status is higher. She refused to take his last name and also made him take her last name.
Hey, the original feminist, maybe.
Like, I know, but then, you know, then she did all this terrible shit. they had a massive, massive wedding. There was about 4,500 guests. And her husband's wedding gift to her was their household, the castle of Chaqueta, I think, is how it's saying. So I do have a picture of it. It's very creepy looking, very gothic. Right. I would honestly love to go see this place.
Let's see it.
So we will put these pictures up on the Instagram. So there you can see.
Oh, wow.
It. I know. So that's kind of what it looks like now, very run down. There is a drawing of kind of what it looked like back then.
Your typical castle, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, but it's...
The ruins now, that just looks super cool.
Yeah, and it's very, very dark looking, and there's kind of like an aerial view of it.
And that's how it is now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like a tourist attraction, or...
I don't know. I didn't look at that. Hmm. Just because I don't...
I want to go visit.
I would love to go to Hungary. I am Hungarian, so I would love to go there.
That's right.
Yeah. This castle was the place. It's now... Oh, it's in Slovakia. That's what it is. It was the Kingdom of Hungary, but now it's Slovakia. That is where Elizabeth committed the majority of her brutal, brutal crimes. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning of their marriage, they really didn't spend a lot of time together because Ferenc was off fighting against the Ottomans.
No honeymoon phase.
No, he was given the nickname the Black Knight of Hungary and was so brutal that all of his enemies were completely terrified of him, and even his allies were really taken aback at his brutality. Like, nobody is going to fuck with him.
I think that's how you... lead back then. People have to be basically terrified to, like, not do what you say.
Well, yeah, that's how you have to, like, stay at the top.
Yes.
So In 1591, the Turks invaded Hungary, which turned into what was known as the Long War, and this devastated the economy of Hungary. The Bathories, however, did not feel the hurt from this at all and actually became richer because Ferenc was just showering Elizabeth with all these gifts from the Ottoman Empire, and they became so wealthy that they actually lent the Hungarian Empire money just to keep the country afloat. So they just honestly seemed untouchable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when their castle was threatened by the Turks, Elizabeth had to defend her husband's estates, which is basically managing the business of everything, and would give refuge to peasants, giving them food, shelter, and medical care. And they were responsible for the Hungarian and Slovakian people. So all this sounds, you know, nice and great for them, like they'd be great people. Well, here's where I mean that I think that they were perfect for each other. Even though they didn't spend much time together, when they did, they bonded over their creepy, creepy love of violence and torturing young servant girls.
So sweet.
So sweet. Ferenc taught Elizabeth different methods of torture, such as rolling up pieces of oiled paper, placing them between the toes of a servant girl, and then lighting it on fire.
Okay, they were way too creative with weird shit back then. Like...
Wow. I know, like when you mentioned earlier about being creative, that's why I was like, gross.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. I never thought it was going to come out in that way.
Yeah. He also gave her a super romantic gift of a clawed glove, so that way she could scratch the faces of servant girls that, you know, didn't do what she said.
What a guy.
But Ferenc isn't the only one that helped Elizabeth become the killer that she was. There was a woman named Anna Darvulia that joined the household as a servant, and she was said to be a witch. Whether or not that was true, it was undeniable to everyone that was around her that Elizabeth's personality went under a drastic change. So, kind of where Ferenc taught her how to torture, Anna supposedly taught her how to kill.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women were accused of being witches back then. Wasn't that kind of the general? I mean, that was a different country at this time, but yeah, and I think before they had explanations for just general psychotic.
She's a witch.
She's a witch.
Yeah. Well, and then also I mentioned earlier that there was rumors that, you know, she was taught Satanism and
all that kind
of stuff. Mm-hmm. So Elizabeth was said to have been responsible for the death of several of her servants, but nobody really noticed because they were peasants. And if any families of the girls were suspicious or had any questions, they were quickly shut down just because of how much power she had. So basically untouchable and could just kill whenever the fuck she wanted to. That couldn't stop the rumors, though. There would be frequent requests for pastors to come to the castle and perform funeral rites for girls that had already died. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's supposed to be done, like, on your deathbed.
Yeah, I don't think it... I mean, I wouldn't know for sure, but I feel like that, yeah, you're right, that it's not done afterwards. Not too late by then?
No. Yeah. So, I mean, and this kept happening over and over and over. So, she would use the same excuse that it was cholera, that cholera killed these girls. Well, one of the priests noticed that the bodies of the girls who had supposedly died from cholera, which is a bacterial disease that spreads through contaminated water and causes diarrhea and dehydration, was brutally beaten. So not cholera.
Cholera is not the kind of thing that externally you're like, "Oh my god, yeah, that's cholera." Like,
no, yeah. Mm-hmm. No. And you're gonna die from like dehydration. You're not gonna die from
anything that looks.
It's not gonna beat the violent shit out of you.
Yeah.
So when he brought that up to Elizabeth, like you mentioned earlier about being questioned, and was basically like, "Look at all the marks on here on her. She's obviously didn't die from cholera." She was furious that he dare accuse her. He threatened that she had powerful relatives who would not tolerate this. And she just stormed out of the church and had her husband smooth things over. Mm-hmm. And then nothing came from that, obviously.
Sure.
So Ferenc and Elizabeth had 5 known children, with their youngest being born in 1598. And then in 1601, Ferenc became ill. And we don't know exactly what his illness was, but it caused him to have paralysis in his legs. Mm. He became permanently disabled, and after 29 years of marriage, when Elizabeth was 44 years old, he died in 1604.
That's a pretty long life for back then, though.
I know. That's what I was thinking, too. Like, that's kind of... I think he was 49 then, because they were 5 years apart.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty long life, especially someone that fought and was so played in wars and everything. I don't know. So after he died, they read his will, and he had entrusted his children and Elizabeth to be cared for by his best friend, Yor Thurzo.
That was the handoff, kind of, right?
Kind of. It's not like he inherited anything. It was more of like, you know, look out for my kids and my wife, protect them.
It wasn't like a thing where now he marries her or becomes her lover or anything like that.
No, he doesn't become that. But
I feel like I've seen that in movies, so I don't know.
I actually didn't really put this in the story, but something that you said earlier made me think of it, that after he died, she became supposedly, like, super promiscuous and was bisexual and just
anyone who would give her the attention,
hedonistic, just like,
wow.
But I couldn't find enough information on that, so I just didn't put it in there. But that's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So even though Elizabeth was a terrible person and so was Ference, she really did change when he died. They were together for almost 30 years, and whether or not they actually loved each other, you kind of get used to someone, or you're used to that kind of constant in your life. He was a really big influence on her.
Especially when that starts so young.
Exactly. You know? She was 10 when they became engaged, and now she's 44. So it's most of her life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So her servants noticed that she became even more and more sadistic. Besides losing her husband, she now had the stress of being in control of their empire, which led to her just being fully immersed into the torturing of these young girls. It's not like there was a shortage of any victims. She had almost 400 servant girls, but she decided that she should probably stop doing that because it would be too bothersome to keep replacing and finding help.
Who's going to be your servant if you kill them all?
If you kill them all, exactly.
So have your servant bring you... sorry. Give her ideas.
She's dead.
Well, I know, but... I don't even know why my thought went there.
So what she started to do was to lure in girls from surrounding villages. And they went because being a peasant and having the opportunity to work for someone like Elizabeth with such a powerful family was really too good to be true, which it was.
Yeah.
She would torture them and then supposedly would have them flung over the castle walls like trash to be ripped apart by wolves.
Ooh,
so horrible. Super fun.
Mm.
So torturing and killing all these girls, she definitely did not do this by herself. She had an evil team of people that would help her facilitate all this. Besides her maybe witch friend Anna, who was her main accomplice in all of this, she had a sadistic nurse that looked after the children, a washerwoman, a disfigured teen, and her friend Dorka. Apparently, the worst ones were Anna and Dorka, and they had this, like, sick competition on, you know, who could inflict the most pain, and they just kind of went along.
Wow. Yeah.
So, basically, it would kind of go down like this every time. A servant girl would make the smallest mistake, like missing a stitch, and if Elizabeth was there, she would just glare at the girl, sometimes just start yelling and beating the shit out of her right there. They would mostly, well, then she would eventually be taken to, like, her little torture chamber. She would also have really fucked up creative punishments to go with whatever they had done wrong.
Oh, wow.
So they would, most of the time, they would be stripped naked and tortured. For instance, if they made a sewing mistake, they were stabbed repeatedly with sewing needles.
Okay, I really did think that was going to go somewhere else, like parts of body being sewn together. And
oh.
Is that weird?
Pisces moon. no. Oh, because of the sewing in the horse.
Well, that and actually just because like, I don't know, there's this like one horror movie that always stuck with me because the chick got her mouth sewn together in it. And I thought that was the most disturbing thing.
What movie
is that? What was it called? It was one word. Killer Land or,
I haven't seen it.
It was a long time ago. And I feel like other movies have done it since then, but that was just the first time I saw it.
You know what I'm thinking? This is not a horror movie at all. I'm thinking of Hocus Pocus.
Oh my God, yeah, I know.
Billy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One of the best movies, though.
I like that. Like, that's a better memory.
It is. Now, I want to touch on something that you talked about. Enjoying the, or would you say, be manipulative? Like, she enjoyed the physical and the psychological.
Yes.
She really did. So she loved psychological torture as well as physical torture. So she was one time sticking needles into the fingers of a girl, and she made the comment, if it hurts the whore, she can pull it out. Mm. So she pulled it out, obviously. Sure, yeah. And when she did, she, Elizabeth, pulled out a knife and cut off her finger. And at least once during all of this, she bit off a chunk of flesh from the face of one of her victims. It could have been multiple, but at least once they have on record that she did that. Jesus, yeah. Christ. So her servants were considered very lucky if they got away at all, and with just, you know, a missing finger or two. Wow. But more often than not, they were just taken to the torture chamber where she would have her garbage squad do most of the dirty work.
Right.
She actually really didn't do a lot of the long torturing. She liked to play with them. She liked to torture them here and there, but I think she liked the idea of knowing that there's, you know, a girl down there being tortured. Or sometimes she would supposedly, you know, come in and observe and then leave. But I think she just really enjoyed just the idea that, you know, in my chamber, there's a woman being tortured right now by my friends or whatever. So, yeah, she's really fucked up. So the investigation that would later take place had trial transcripts. So we know, that's how we know some of the things that happened in the torture chambers.
They did transcripts back then.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's how we know a lot of this. So they would do things like use pincers to rip off the girl's flesh, insides being torn out, and some reports of forced cannibalism. Some girls were stripped naked, covered in honey and ants, and then left outside to die. Yeah. So going into this, the reason I initially wanted to cover this story is because I had always heard that she bathed in her victim's blood, or that because she was from Hungary in Transylvania, that she was the first vampire, and that she thought that it would keep her youthful and all of this. So I found that that was just not true.
Yeah.
Out of over 300 witness statements of all the horrible shit she did, not one person mentioned anything about her bathing in blood. They mentioned that the floors would be so soaked in blood that there would be puddles, but no one ever said anything like she wanted to collect it or nothing.
Was there ever any kind of like old movie or a movie made about her where they dramatized it by using something like that?
I think it's just because it was so long ago and it was so fucked up what she did that it just, you know.
Tales get told and the truth, people
exaggerate here and there. Yeah. And then, you know, all of a sudden she is bathing in blood. Right. So I guess.
A very old game of telephone.
Yeah, so it's not like she had like a sadistic skincare routine. Okay, so rumors of all the torture that was happening and all the missing girls spread throughout the Kingdom of Hungary. Between 1602 and 1604 is when they really started spreading around, but they weren't taken seriously. By 1609, they were completely widespread, but there wasn't anything they could do to stop it because peasants were not allowed to bring up charges to anyone that was of noble blood. So, and on sometimes these parents would sell their children to Elizabeth on the thought that they would have a better life and be a servant for this great family.
Not knowing what she's going to do.
Right. So the family gets money and they're thinking, you know, my daughter's going to have this great life.
No, so nobody knew about what was going on in there until the trial.
It was just rumors. It was just rumors. All of a sudden, these girls, again, just kept dying of cholera, supposedly. Just her go-to excuse.
Horrific cholera.
Yeah. Bodies were really starting to pile up, and she was running out of places to bury them.
I was thinking that when you said that earlier. I was like, God, that's got to be a disgusting backyard. Like, how much,
Yeah. Some of them were left in shallow graves, and dogs would dig them up and eat them. So, in that same year, her torture bestie, Anna, died of a stroke. Her children were all grown. They were married. They were gone. Oh, and her debts were mounting. So she kind of went into this spiral of desperation and loneliness because her husband's dead. Then her best friend dies. Her kids are gone. She's got all this estate to manage and her debts are mounting.
Garbage squad just gone.
Yeah. Well, not the whole garbage squad, but her best friend. Her best one. Yeah, her best friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is when she kind of started to fuck up a little bit. She was running out of these peasant girls. So she started killing girls that were of a slightly higher social status.
She killed all the peasants. There's no peasants left to kill. Jeez.
Not all the peasants, but...
all the ones she could find.
All the ones that she wanted. All the ones that she wanted. Mm-hmm. And so she went to, a higher social status. It could be that she kind of thought that she was running out, or maybe she was just fucking bored.
True. And wanted to elevate her game a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But this is where she fucked up, because these are not peasants. These are people... They're not... anywhere near as noble as her, but they are of a higher
maybe social the standing. Middle class of the time, or
yeah, but they did have somewhat of a higher social status.
Okay,
so Elizabeth, her scheme in that was that she presented to them that she had this etiquette school. So she's this grand noble woman, and she's got an etiquette school. Send your daughters to me. And so they did, and she did not teach them etiquette.
No. what did she teach them?
She taught them how to be severely beaten. She would burn or mutilate their hands, burn them with hot tongs, put them in freezing cold water, freeze or starve them to death, and torture them with needles.
She had a thing with needles.
But, again, because they're not peasants, people actually took notice this time. Mm-hmm. Witnesses gave names of relatives that died there, and some reported seeing traces of torture on dead bodies, like the priest did. So these parents went to King Matthias II, like, are you going to do anything about this? Like, this woman...
He's like, no, I'm terrified of her.
Yeah, this woman is pretending to have an etiquette school, and she's killing all of our daughters. Mm-hmm. So finally, the king decides to have Elizabeth investigated. The investigation was given to the king's highest ranking representative. And who was that, you may ask? Mm-hmm. That was good old Yor Thurzo. Oh, the one who was supposed to look after Elizabeth and her children.
Wouldn't you know it?
Her dead husband's best friend. So he decides to interview witnesses. He's kind of taken aback by this, but there's a lot of people claiming this. So he's like, okay, let me figure this out.
Like, he doesn't really feel the need to protect her to the point of lying about this. He's really investigating.
He's loyal to the king. He has to do his job.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he decides to interview these witnesses, and soon he had dozens of people that testified to all the fucked up shit she was doing. Some servants who had actually managed to get out alive told him about seeing blood-drenched walls, mm-hmm. hearing terrible screams, and noticing the massive, continuously growing DIY cemetery this bitch had in the backyard.
Jesus. Yeah, how can you hide that?
Yeah. And two court officials claimed to have actually witnessed Elizabeth torturing and killing young servant girls. So by now, Yor is obviously convinced of Elizabeth's guilt. But he still feels guilty because he did promise his dying best friend that he would protect her. So he was really confused about what to do, so he decided to reach out to her family. So he asked them for advice, and all the relatives agreed that they would have this kind of secret arrangement so that Yor could continue his investigation, and then Elizabeth would just go directly to prison to avoid an embarrassing public trial and execution, and so the family could save face, and so mm-hmm. protect the family name. But I do just think it's funny that literally none of them thought she was innocent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, like, absolutely. Let's just do this in secret, though. I'm sure she did. She fucked up.
Yeah.
So, by December 12th, 1610, Elizabeth's son-in-law, Nicola, confirmed the agreement with Yor about the imprisonment of Elizabeth and the distribution of the estate. December 30th, 1610, Yor comes back to Bathory Castle with armed guards who hid outside the castle gates. As Yor and the guards went inside to arrest Elizabeth and her accomplices, they noticed a mutilated body of a young girl near the doorway. They then heard screaming, which led them to the torture chamber, where they discovered her garbage squad murder team torturing another victim. Some say that she was caught herself, but... Everything else that I saw said that she was actually just eating dinner. She wasn't down there. She was just eating dinner while they were torturing. But then she was caught and arrested. She immediately claimed innocent and blamed everything on her servants.
Like, I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, look, you didn't catch me. You caught them. Yeah. it ended up being that 306 people testified against her and all the fucked up shit she did. Her accomplices all turned against her. And while the total murder count that she was convicted of was 80, through all the witness statements, they say it's 650.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I haven't known 650 people in my life.
No. In January of 1611, during the trial, is where witnesses and survivors took the stand. Bodies from Elizabeth's cemetery were examined as well. The accomplices were all given the death sentences. But before that, they were given their very own torture by having their fingers torn out by iron tongs, then put to death and tossed onto a bonfire.
Death penalty was a little different back then.
Yeah. But one of the accomplices, the washerwoman, she was said to have been the kindest. She was actually beaten by Elizabeth herself. And so she was just given life imprisonment instead of death. Elizabeth, however, was never put on trial. She was never made to go up there. So,
and they heard enough from everybody else.
Oh, yeah. But they never made her go up there and confront witnesses or families of people she killed or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was sentenced to life imprisonment in her own fucking castle.
Okay, that is not life imprisonment. That is castle arrest.
House arrest, castle arrest. Yes.
House arrest, castle edition, and that just doesn't seem very, it just doesn't seem very bad. Oh my god, I'm gonna stay in my castle, you guys.
House arrest, castle edition. So her only visitors for the most part were priests. And she was said to just be crazed with rage. She never acknowledged the severity of her crimes and still blamed the accomplices the whole time. She never took responsibility of it. At one point, Yor came to visit her. And when she started just really going in on him, like, how dare you? You know, I didn't do this. He said to her, "You, Elizabeth, are a wild animal. You are in the last months of your life. You do not deserve to breathe the air on this earth or see the light of the Lord. You shall disappear from this world and shall never reappear in it again. As the shadows envelop you, may you find time to repent your bestial life."
Mm.
Wow, so on
words can hurt.
Yeah. Okay. So on August 21st, 1614, she complained to a guard that she had cold hands, and he just told her to go to sleep. And she did, and she was found dead the next day. She was dead at 54 years old, which honestly,
wow,
that's pretty long.
Yeah,
for back then. We thought, what, 49 was long? She lived to be 54.
Crazy.
So originally, she was buried in the church cemetery, but that really pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah.
So reportedly, they moved her to the Bathory family crypt. However, when the crypt was opened in 1995, her body was not found. And nobody knows where she is.
See, someone was like, you know what this bitch deserves? She deserves to be fed to the wolves.
Maybe.
I don't know.
So I did want to touch on a little conspiracy theory that I came across.
Okay.
Some have said that all of this was completely made up.
The whole story of Elizabeth?
Yes, that all of this was completely made up, stating that these moves were largely politically motivated because of how wealthy she was, how much land she owned, the fact that she owed the king money, the fact that she was a woman and had all this power.
So basically saying politics even played dirty back then.
That's what they're saying. I mean, you know, the king owed her money from when they lent it to him to keep the country afloat. And if she's imprisoned or dead, they no longer owe her money.
Oh.
And she loses all her power. So the theory also says that all the bodies of beaten women that Yor supposedly found when he came in and investigated were just injured people that she was giving refuge to. Remember I said earlier that she was supposed to take care of the Hungarian Slovakian people. She would give refuge to people and food and shelter and medical care.
So they were just kind of hanging around?
She was giving them shelter after, you know, being beaten or whatever.
Right, being beaten by someone else.
They were in need of medical care. They were just injured or something.
She's just a good lady.
She was just a really good lady. But Then there's over 300 witnesses. There's evidence of beaten bodies. There's the priest who noticed these girls weren't dying of cholera and that she was saying that there was cholera. And I find it odd that a priest would lie, especially back then.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was more than likely just a monster.
I'm sure.
It's just hard to say because it was over, 400 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, now that would really suck if that becomes your legacy and it was 100% like a lie. But that seems like a very huge lie to be able to just pull off.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel like especially because it was back then and she was a woman, I feel like it would have been a little easier to take her down. But I don't know because she's that Leo. Not going to go down without a fight.
Try taking me down.
Like, so yeah. Who knows? Mm-hmm. It could have been, I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting and that it would be really sad if all of this was just fucked up and fake and that she was actually really great for Hungary and helped all these people and then
just thrown in the mud.
Everything taken from her. Although that is true about Ferenc being what he was known in Hungary.
Yeah, no one denied that.
She was probably a monster because there's so much evidence. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree that a lot of it was probably embellished, hence why a lot of people think of her. Yeah, the bathing in blood thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that is the story of Elizabeth Bathory, a.k.a. the Blood Countess.
Oh, goodness. Wow. That was a good one.
That was a really good one. And a lot of what you said in the chart really matched up with the story. I liked chart first.
Yeah. That was very enlightening. I mean, because sometimes when you look at certain aspects of a chart and in character traits, you don't always go and associate to that level or like the creativity. Or
yeah, that's why
great
I said
imagination.
That's like, why I said gross.
Yeah, that's insane. But I think it's spot on. And like I said, as much as you know, a good Leo is a good Leo, man. A bad one's bad one, man. Epically bad. And I think that totally matches up with her.
Absolutely,
she's like the epitome of the worst Leo ever.
Yeah, yeah. If we believe that all this is true.
Yes.
Which I think I do.
I mean, I do. I believe it.
Okay, well, I think that's all we have today.
Yeah.
Okay, please rate, review, and subscribe if you like what you hear. Check out our Instagram at Killer Stargazing for pictures of each episode and our recipes for the killer cocktails, anything like that. Email us. Mm-hmm. Let us know who you think we should do next. Do you have any questions for us or any true crime related stories that you have? And if we pick your story to read on the podcast, we will also give you a little birth chart reading.
Yay.
And that email is killerstargazing@gmail.com. Until next time.
Bye. Guys.